Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. We are so pleased to have you with us again tonight for Satsang. We're going to go ahead and get started with our protection. At the end, after I say so be it, just keep your eyes closed for a few seconds. We're just going to kind of hold space. So I'm not going to do anything major, but let's just kind of stay in that space for a few, okay? Go ahead, call yourselves forward, get nice and centered, take a deep breath. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the Sapphire Blue Ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am Presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light for each person listening to this program. I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them, and I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you, and to humanity. PLA Ann and I place ourselves in service to all of you. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very nice. Why don't you come on back and we'll get started. All right. So we are going to, I think, attempt to pick up where we left off 2 weeks ago. Yes. We couldn't be live with you last week because we had some issues with PLN not being able to breathe. It was a struggle. So we're going to pick up where we left off. Now, remember the last show that we did run live 2 weeks ago? I wanted to call, it's time to take your personal vow of poverty, which, of course, was kind of tongue-in-cheek, meant to scare you. Not really. And so what it felt like I didn't get a chance to do was to really address that one particular point. And So I think we're going to try and kind of backtrack a little and get back into that so I can bring forward what it was that I was really trying to get to that night. Remember I was talking about, because we're a church, and I was talking about how I had taken a vow of poverty. And of course, what everybody thinks that means and what it actually means are two very different things. But the point of the discussion was to lead everybody to a place where they really start to look at their values and how it is that they, what they say that they value internally, does not necessarily correspond with how in the material world they actually show what they value, right? Does that make sense? PLM, does that make sense to you? Okay. So while we can say that in our heart of hearts we value this, it could be that in the actual physical world, by our actions, we are not showing that we value that. We may be showing that we value the exact opposite. And I do think that we did make that point in the show. I think I used different examples. I think we actually did get to that point. Okay. So the point of the whole you taking your personal vow of poverty is that it was meant to bring you to a space where you really do start to look at, what do I value? And when I say that I value it, do I value it to the extent where I'm willing to actually stand for it in the world? Because isn't that really the mark of how much you value something, right? We can pay lip service to all kinds of things, but if we don't actually take action based on that, then what is it? What is its value to us, really, right? So the whole point with the vow of poverty for me was that I was at a place in my own walk where I absolutely saw that there is no need for such huge discrepancy in how people are valued in the world. As far as materialism goes, why is it some people have so much, some people have so little, and is that really... is it just? Is it right? You know, from a very fundamental place. And so when we started the Shambhala Center and actually set it up as a church, it was my choice to say, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give everything I have to help spread the teachings that I have had the incredible gift of being led through by my guide, and having been through them and having been through this walk in such a way that I had a guide who never asked anything of me, nothing. I mean, nothing. And what I knew from this walk I've had with her for, 8 years, I guess, is that, I mean, if I had $1 billion, it wouldn't be enough to give to her in payment, so to speak, for the gift that she gave me. And I recognized that so strongly that when we moved forward to do, for myself to do my own work, what I kept seeing was that, you know, it's so not about the money. It's never been about the money. You know, how could I carry these understandings? How could I live from these understandings and have such a capacity to be able to deliver them to people in a way that they can actually take in? How could I have that capacity and not freely give it to others? And that's where it's always been a struggle, because in the world it says, well, you're offering this service and it should be worth X amount of value and you should have people pay for your service and blah, blah, blah. And always, right from the very beginning, my heart said, no, you know, no, that's not what this is about. This is information freely given. And that gave me a little bit of a little conundrum there, wasn't there? How do you pay your bills when you're not charging for the work that you do? Oh my. And then I think at the end of that last program, didn't I say, bring to everyone's attention, like, who do you think is your, what were the words I used? I know I made the point of, like, if you think you're the one responsible for that job you have, for the amount of money you make, you know, you are mistaken, because it's the universe that's supporting you, right? Not you as the doer, because you are not the doer, not in the way you think you are anyway. So with Shambhala Center and all our work, you know, it's been always about, look, I'm willing to give you everything that I can. I will be there for you, and I'll function as your guide, and I'm responsible for you on many levels. And all I ask in return is that you give according to what your heart tells you the value is, right? And so with Shambhala Center, that's what we do there, you know, gladly and most appreciatively take donations from people who feel that there is value in what we're doing, right? And any work that comes my way that I take, it goes into the Shambhala Center so that it can be distributed for the betterment of everybody who's taking part in what we're doing, right? So there's no salaries, you know, we're all a bunch of volunteers. And I think it's a beautiful exercise to sit and just look at, okay, so where I am in my life, would I be willing to do that? You know, would I really be willing to say, I will give of my talent, whatever that talent may be, and what I want you to do with the fruits of my labor is I want to be able to put it all in with everybody else's, and let's make sure it all gets distributed for the highest good of everybody, right? And in this country, certainly, and most of what we just call the Western world, I guess, I mean, what do you think the percentage of people is that would stand up and say, yeah, I'm willing to do that? like 0.0001. It's hard, right? There's a great leap of faith that goes on here. But it's funny because, you know, I have the fortune of being in a space where I'm in communication with masters, and they all function like this. They give so freely of themselves and ask nothing, you know, but they're supported and the universe supports their work, right? So again, we have it in our head that, you know, my work equals a dollar value, you know, and who says support has to come in the form of money, right? Because it doesn't. That's another whole thing. So when I ask the question, are you ready to take your personal vow of poverty? That's what I'm getting at. It's time that we, as a collective, really take a nice hard look at how this world is functioning. And is it, you know, I don't like to use the word morally because that's part of the whole fallen system. But in that space, is it morally right to be sitting in a space where, you know, you're taking $10,000 vacations twice a year, and then you could have people living 200 miles away from your house who are in abject poverty, right? Now, from one level, remember, everything happens on multiple levels here. So on one level, it's perfect just the way it is, right? Because the person making $1 million a year for whatever reason is meant to right now, and the person who's living in poverty for whatever reason is meant to right now. And we know that it's perfect that way because that's the way it is. There's nothing outside of the perfection of God, right? But if we back up and really look at it from the heart, if I asked you, can you just get yourself so in your heart that nothing else can taint what your heart is saying to do? So all the little voices that say, oh my gosh, but I have a mortgage payment, you know, and the voice that says, oh, well, what would I do if I didn't have, you know, this, or, oh my gosh, and all those little fearful things that come up. If you were able to just completely ignore them and just focused in on your heart, what would your heart say, right? The heart would not be comfortable with that situation existing as it is. And we value the people who are willing to, you know, take less for themselves and serve others. And we raise them up and look at them as messiahs, or look at them as examples of purity and the examples of, you know, what everyone strives to be. Well, that's lovely. But again, you know, is that just lip service? What stops us from actually doing what they do? You know, I mean, really, just because you have a job and you, you know, aren't part of the clergy or something, doesn't mean you can't spend more of your resources, whatever that means to you, whether it's money or your own time, right? Or just a talent that you have that could be donated off or whatever it is. You know, everybody could do something. Everybody. You know, my own family, I mean, we were on food stamps. And when we were taking donations for the kids in the Charlotte school systems, who, I mean, there were schools here that 100% of the student body of that school was on free lunch. That tells you the level of poverty that was sitting there in those schools. So we would, through our Create a New World group, we would go and we would collect food donations. And a lot of these food donations were actually going home with kids on weekends, because those kids, from the time they left school on Friday, wouldn't eat again until Monday morning. I mean, wrap yourself around that. Why on earth, in this beautiful world of abundance, do we have children who don't have food for 2 days straight? You know, it's horrifying and heartbreaking. And so even though my family was on food stamps, I mean, I found a way to donate food to them. I mean, give me a break. That's ridiculous. Everybody can do something, you know, unless you are one of those people who is in that situation. But are we not here? Are we not called to do everything we can to lift others up? Right? And so what's my gift? Well, you know, I was trained as a teacher, and so this is the way that I teach now. My teaching isn't really teaching. It's just guidance, right? Because you have to walk it. It's fully experiential. Your journey is fully experiential. If you think for a second that you're going to reach enlightenment by reading books, you've got another thing coming. If you think you're going to reach enlightenment by attending a workshop, watching DVDs, nope. Enlightenment is a state of consciousness that is only reached when that seeker goes in and experiences everything that needs to be experienced on a very personal level. And then at some point, the seeker has the realization that the one that the seeker was seeking, you know, was already the one who was sought. And that's a beautiful moment. But it doesn't come from books. And books are lovely and they serve their purpose. Sometimes they act as a beautiful trigger for consciousness, right? To have a concept come in that actually makes the mind kind of stop dead in its tracks, you know. And it opens that doorway up a little more, and they can be beautiful. But they can be used as by the mind as a crutch and as something that will actually keep you from enlightenment. They'll work against you. If you're someone who, you know, studies all the time, all the time, all the time, and you read the books and you put yourself into practice and you're very rigid about the practice and, you know, you're just really in that space, that actually is not going to serve you in the long run. At some point, you're going to have to drop all of it. I actually had a personal experience. I reached a place in my work with my guide where she flat out told me I was not allowed to read anymore. You're not allowed to read anything. I'm like, nothing? She's like, well, you know, if you want to pick up like a romance novel, go ahead. But no spiritual reading. And that seemed like, I was like, are you kidding me? And she said, and you'll understand why, but you have to stop, you know. And I did. And I understood why. I saw it very clearly one day, you know. I was using it as a crutch to make me feel better. And I used it to kind of fill space where I could have been doing other things that would have served me much better. But I was like the consummate student. I love to read. Get my hands on anything and just read, you know, that teacher in me, I guess. And I saw it one day and it was crystal clear, and I was so grateful that she had forbidden me from reading. And it was so funny because after that I just didn't have a need to do it anymore. So now every now and again I'll pick up a book. There are several books that I actually do recommend for people to read, because they are the book itself will shift your consciousness. They're amazing books. And at some point I'll start giving those titles out. I can feel it now. People are going, well, what is it? what is it? I'll go on Amazon tonight and order it. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, read your way to enlightenment. My gosh, how many people wouldn't even need to be here if that was the case, right? The beauty is that your journey is solely yours, and every experience happening in your life is there as part of that journey, right? So we'll go back to something that I say over and over again, and that is that your life is your spiritual path. Your life is your spiritual path, meaning it's not the I went to Drenvalo Melchizedek's workshop in Sedona, and that's part of my spiritual path. And I go to church, you know, on Easter and Christmas and a couple Sundays during the year, and that's part of my spiritual path. And I read the Gita last year, and that was part of my spiritual path. But the rest of it is just my regular life. No. No, that's completely wrong, and you need to scratch that and start fresh. Every single thing you do, everything is part of your spiritual path. There is nothing that is not spiritual. Your entire existence is the work of spirit. So how could there be anything that's not spiritual? I mean, that's a very rational thing, right? You can reason that out. If everything was created of spirit, not by spirit, of spirit, how could there be anything not spiritual? There can't be. It's impossible. And I love people who are very left-brained when they get stuff like that, because they can actually, they'll wrap themselves around that. They go, oh my gosh, that's like true. I have one student in particular. He loves things like that, because if he can see that it's rational, he's all over it. Right? He's listening tonight. You know I'm talking about you. But it's perfect for him because it stands to reason. If everything is of spirit, then everything, by definition, is spiritual. Yes, going to the grocery store is a spiritual experience. So is taking a shower. So is changing a diaper. So is driving your car. Plucking your eyebrows. I don't care what you're doing. It's all spiritual. And it's all about how you function in those moments. Every opportunity to make a choice, right? Where does it come from? Does it come from the voice of the ego, of the lower mind that says, me, 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 me? Or does it come from the heart that doesn't understand the concept of me? It doesn't even really understand the concept of we. It seems like it would, right? But it's the concept of I, the greater I, which is the we that we experience here, yeah? Because remember, everything that you're experiencing in your world is your own creation. There's only one self, and that self is everywhere. And that's what you experience in your world, is the self, over and over and over and over. And the only thing that brings you pain and suffering in the world is when you forget that, and then stand in the space where you think there's an I, and then there's a them. Because the concept that that's a them, when you look at them, it's so different from what you consider I, that it sets up the whole game of separation. And you can't be in your heart when you're separate, because it just doesn't work like that. So what else is there concerning the vow of poverty conceptually that I need to say?
One thing that we spoke about afterwards was you had asked a specific question while you were talking about that. And the question was why is it okay? Why do you make the choice to go and spend money on things like haircuts, going out for dinner, vacations, but then it's okay to say that there's really nothing left over for the things that you value, such as church or, you know, a guru, things like that. And at the time, the thought that came was, because you'll love me anyway. And I feel like so many people, you know, your church is never going to turn you away. Doesn't matter how much you give, you know, you're not going to turn me away no matter how much I donate or whatever. And it's because you'll love me anyway. And so many people are okay with that. It's okay to spend the money on all this other stuff because you know you're never going to get turned away.
You know, and this is a very interesting point, because that's true. I'm sure if you're sitting with that and really looking at it, you feel the truth in what she's saying. And if we take this to the imprint, this is a very interesting thing, because yes, it's true that there's this sense of you love me unconditionally, right? If you're say my minister, well, because that's a great example, you're my minister. So, you know, it's your job to love me unconditionally. It's your job to take me in. Even if I've done something horrible, forgive me for my sins and all that, right? But at the same time, there's a lack of trust that sits there. And that's what we see so clearly. And that's what's in the imprint. Then in the imprint, when consciousness had this experience of separation and actually believed it to be true, that at that point, what it wants, remember, what it wants more than anything is to be back, re-merged with Source, right? Or the creator, God, whatever you want to call it. That's what it wants. But what it experiences, and it remembers its first experiences, and it always holds on to the memory to project out what's going to come next, which is the same thing, is that sense of wanting, recognizing that it got separated, wanting to go back, and then making the attempt, assuming that it was going to be successful, and actually kind of hitting that wall where it bounced away again, and then it tries over and over and over again, and every time it recognizes that it can't get back, that for as hard as it has tried, it isn't allowed back in. Kind of like getting, you got kicked out of the Garden of Eden and that's it, it's done, you're not coming back, right? And so you can see where a person, because they function from that level of consciousness, that's part of, that's the program. Right. So it's very easy to say that we value that. Right. And then, like you said, you know, well, they'll always take me. But there's this space where they really don't trust it. They really don't trust it. And that's part of like when I spoke about the vow of poverty, that's part of that whole thing. It takes a great deal of trust to move into a space where you're willing to say, I'm not going to own it. It doesn't have to be mine. It can be ours. Because what are you saying? What you're saying is I'm willing to be vulnerable. Yeah. And those of you who have worked with me know what I say about the heart. And that is that the heart is 100% vulnerable. Because in the heart, there is no polarization. In the heart, there is no bad side to anything. There is no, you know, boogeyman out there trying to get you. There's no one out there trying to take advantage of you, trying to manipulate you, trying to dominate you, trying to control you. It doesn't exist in the heart, right? And so when one actually functions from the heart, they're completely open to these things in this world that are very polarized and that can come that way. And you can get just blasted and not even see it coming. So from the story of the lower mind, it says, oh, no, no, no. Like, I've done that before and I'm not doing it again. And it builds these walls up, right? The walls are experienced as the constriction that you feel around your heart center. It's there all the time and you don't even recognize it because it's so subtle and you're so used to it. The only time you recognize it is when you're out of it long enough and then it comes and then you feel it. You feel it hit and you feel it just tighten down around the heart and it's like, wow, it's painful. It's really painful, but you can't experience it when you are so used to it that that's all you know, right? And you think you're happy, you think everything's great, and you and it actually totally isn't, but you just can't experience it. But there's a trust thing there, you know? And so because the trust thing sits there, then the ego always wants to, you know, take care of itself first. Because ultimately, I just don't trust you. And that's a relationship it has with God. Ultimately, even though I will stand here and I will say, you know, I love God with all my heart, that I put God before anything. When push comes to shove, you don't trust that. Right? You've been hurt, and your fear is that you will be hurt again. So you are going to set everything up in your world so that your experience isn't that is set up so that you won't experience that kind of pain again. Okay. And it takes, you know, it really takes a certain level of consciousness to be able to say, you know, I do, like, I have one of my students, like, just absolutely loves animals. She absolutely loves animals, you know. And it takes, it's one thing to say I love animals and to, say, get on Facebook and be in support of animal rights groups or something, right? But it's another thing to show your value that you placed in those things by either donating money or volunteering at a shelter, or see what I mean? Like, that's taking it to a whole other level. And that is from your heart. You don't volunteer at an animal shelter because you're expecting something in return, right? You just don't. You do it because you want to, and there's something satisfying and beautiful about it for you. And that's why you do it, right? But you have to do it knowing that in doing this way, that it means you're going to sacrifice something else from your personal wants, desires, needs, and all of that. It could be money. It could be time, whatever it may be. And it's not easy to do. But at some point, you have to look and say, what am I really committed to? And that's the thing that right now is so key, is that as a collective, we are in the beginning stages of an enormous, enormous shifting in consciousness on a collective level. And I'm not using the word enormous lightly here. I mean it. And we are in the beginning stages. And those of you out there who are very sensitive, you're feeling it. The more sensitive you are, the more you're feeling it. And it is wreaking havoc with lightworkers right now. It really is. People who are just exhausted, and then the energies are running so hard that if you are not super aware of what's happening on a collective level, you are engaging in the energies and it's becoming personal for you and it's dragging you down with it. And it's just going to get worse. I hate to sound like the bearer of bad news or something, but literally the energetics are just going to get worse because they have to. The whole thing is dissolving. And so we are going to see it get, it's going to continue to just ramp up and ramp up and ramp up. Now, the good news is that on the other side of it, when the shift actually happens, no one's going to remember any of it. It'll be like the waking up from a dream now, where that dream just fades off and then it's just gone. Right? And this won't be any different. So for as bad as anything does get, it is truly very, very temporary. Just a blip, you know. It won't even be remembered. But for right now, all of you as lightworkers have a real challenge in that you're being called to really hold your focus on the fact that there is this collective energetic moving. All of the discordant and disqualified energies that have been created by man, right, are all coming to the surface now to be cleared. And so based on the way this reality functions, they're coming to the surface and they're either going to be cleared because we actually see them for what they are and decide collectively that that's not how we're going to function anymore, or the opposite could happen. You know, you look at Atlantis, that whole thing. That's what you're looking at there. The opposite can happen, can actually make it worse. You could fall all over again. So this is, there's no coincidence that, you know, a couple of weeks ago I started talking to you so strongly about, what are you willing to do here? Are you really willing to just give of yourself, just to give of yourself without being ultra concerned about getting something in return? You know? Because we have to look at this. It's really important. The danger people are running into is if they can't move themselves into that space more and more, they're going to get swept up and all the energetics that are part of this dissolution process, and life in the manifest could become a lot more difficult. It doesn't have to. And this is the thing that, you know, as a guide, you kind of, there's only so much you can say to your students, right? Because they have to walk their walk. But the way that the work is if you're doing deep spiritual work, you know, you have every opportunity given to you to go in and flesh out whatever beliefs it is that you've been holding and do the work to see through them so that it can be released. And then any of the karmic bonds that are attached to it can be released too. And you have every opportunity to do that. Not everybody's willing to look at it. So that's fine, you know, and you know, the masters will bring situations to you when you're in your world where it gives you another opportunity. It brings it kind of right up front and center for you to look at. You have an opportunity to do something with it. Well, at some point, if you have chosen not to move forward with that particular bit of work, you're going to have to live it out in the physical world. And many times it's not pretty. It's not done as punishment by any stretch. It's just that the lesson has to be learned, right? And so the universe doesn't have there's no good or bad. There's no like, you're being rewarded and now you're being punished. It's none of that, right? It's very neutral. Universe is very neutral. It's just saying that this is what you're showing. The universe is saying, well, this is what you're showing by your actions, that you need more of that. So we're going to send it, right? That was the part of the real issue with people who got really into the law of attraction work, is that they're so focused on their what I want thing that what they couldn't see is that they were coming at it from a place that was the exact reverse. They were saying, I want that because I don't have it. And if that's how you're going about trying to get something, you're only going to bring more of what you don't have to yourself. It's the only way it can work. I hope you're following this. This is really important. Remember, your desires from a personal place, desire stems from unmet needs that reside within the personal self, within the ego. Okay? There's something that you need, and when you don't have it, mind will create a desire for it so that then you could feel like you're taking some kind of action to go get it. Well, the going and getting it, you know, you're so attached to the outcome of that, right? That the attachment alone isn't going to allow it to happen. It may happen, you know, now and again, you won't be able to hold it. It just won't happen. Because you're focused fundamentally in the spot that says, I don't have it. It's all based in lack, right? And that's the exact opposite of what your nature is as a divine being. Your heart doesn't know a thing about lack. It's abundant, right? Abundant everything. It's expansive, right? The heart is ever expanding. Just like rays coming out of the sun, they just go, right? Just go, 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 go. Just ever expanding. And that is your heart. That it's God. But as soon as you get in that space of what I don't have, what I need to have, what I want to have, and I wish I had, and wouldn't it be great if you're sitting in all those spaces, all you're doing is reinforcing the negative. So it's like, you know, the whole genie in the bottle thing, your wish is my command thing. Well, that's exactly how that works. I'm tired of being poor, so I want to win the Powerball. And then the genie says, your wish is my command. And it gives you what you're really reinforcing, which is I'm broke. Right? I'm in resistance to being broke. And the universe wants you to see your resistance and break that habit. So it says, oh, so what do we need to bring you? I guess more of that. Keep sitting and swirling around in that until you realize you're really not. It's a concept, right? It's a concept. What is it to be broke? Well, doesn't that just depend on where you live? being broke here, sitting in Charlotte, North Carolina, looks very different than being broke in Uganda, right? In the Amazon. So it's all about, you know, and it's not enough. And I've spoken about this before too. It's not enough to just psychologically flip it and sit in the space of, oh, now I'm going to just really hyper-focus on everything is great. Everything is great. It's all love and light, right? I'm not attached. And that's coming out of fear too. It's all polarized until it's not. At some point, when enough dissolution has taken place, you really see through the whole game, period. And at that point, you function from the Christ itself, right? Which does function in the highest good of all concerned. It does have the capacity to be a doer of the divine, right? Whatever the will of God is that's moving, the Christ itself has full capacity to witness what is wanting to move and to be a vehicle here to move it. And it is not attached to the outcome of whatever that is that it's being asked to move. That's a really hard thing for people to wrap themselves around here, because it's all about outcome. If I'm going to invest this, I want to make sure I have that on the outside, right? Or I don't feel comfortable investing this unless I see enough proof through numbers or through projections that this will be the return. And that is the exact opposite of what Spirit asks you to do. Spirit says, just show up and trust, right? Faith. Have faith that the universe will support you. All you have to do is show up. But it's not an easy path to walk, is it? Because you don't know what the end result is going to be. And sometimes, and I've seen it in my own personal work, sometimes you'll get this huge inspiration to start something, and you'll invest money, you'll invest time, you'll invest, you know, energy, which is the most important thing anyway. And then it gets to a certain place and it just stops, right? Now, from a personal space, what would happen? Well, the personal self would either keep pushing. Well, I have to make something, you know, it has to work. I have to make something of this. I keep pushing. I'm going to just keep doing it. Or it'll repolarize. It'll do the exact opposite, and it'll just give up, throw its arms up in the air, say, oh, nothing I ever do works out. I failed, right? Neither of them are true at all. I had that experience. I created, we have a global network called Create a New World, and anyone who would want to join us, it's a global social network. It's at addyourenergy.com. And I started that. I got this really solid push from within one night, and I started that website in a night, created the whole thing. It was a crazy amount of work. Didn't know why I was doing it. All I knew was it was supposed to be called Create a New World, right? And I put this whole thing together. It was in January of, what year was that? 2009? It was a long time ago. Yeah. And it sat there until, you know, honestly, I think I created it and I sent an email out to people I knew just to say, you know, you want to come and join it or something. Two people, I think, maybe joined up like initially. And I literally forgot about it. I completely forgot about it. And it was almost, I want to say it was close to a year later when just out of the blue, someone joined that group. I don't even know how they found it on the internet, honestly. I feel like, but all of a sudden I got this email that so-and-so, you know, wants to join Create a New World. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I totally forgot about that website. And then I accepted the person in and I was like, wow, okay, so maybe that's my little sign. Maybe it's time people would be ready to do it, you know. And I sent a few emails out. And there's a gentleman out there doing incredible work. His name is James Gilliland. And he's his work is out at ESETI. And I sent him an email asking just, would you be interested in sharing the link to this? You know, it's just something where I'm trying to start to move. And he did. He shared it with his whole network. And in like less than a week, it was like 3 days or something, I had like 200 people join. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, it's incredible. But if I was attached to it from the time that, you know, and it's continued to grow since, and other things have come off of it. It's a beautiful thing. And the thing is, though, if I had attached to it at the beginning, right, and if I really, this thing came and I'm supposed to do this, so I do it, and then I start getting all disgruntled because I can't get people to join, it's become too personal. I'm too attached, right? So now it's not the universe making it happen. It's the doer here trying to just pull it in. And it may not be right timing yet. What you can't see is that everything that you're attaching yourself to and the things that you are trying to bring forward, it's not just you that's part of that whole collection of things that have to happen. There are many people involved in all of them, right? It could be that all of the people who are going to be part of a group, it could be they're just not ready yet. They haven't woken up enough to know that they would even recognize, oh, I'd like to join that group, right? But if I just gave up on it, and when no one showed up in a few months, I canceled the account, then where would it be when they were ready, right? It's not your place to know what the end result is going to be. Because every time you think you know the end result and you're trying to control that, I promise you, you cannot begin to imagine what the end result could be in relation to what spirit can do with it. We are so limited here in what we can actually conceptualize. Spirit knows no boundaries at all, nothing. And really our own job is just to get out of the way. And I say that it's the personal self, just to get out of the way. You don't need to control anything. You don't need to be worried about the outcome, right? Just let it go. I love that little cute little saying, you know, let go, let God. I love that because it's fantastic. Because that's what we're all being asked to do. But you're being asked to do it with everything, everything. Which isn't always so easy. Hey, you had a question that came in from a viewer, listener, whatever we call them.
Yes, we did. Okay, so the question is, about a month ago, Shusara was speaking to love. As I am trying to live as a loving being, I am reminded that self-love is equally important and that I need to work on my own self-love. Can you speak to this and why one may struggle with this seemingly simple concept?
Sure. Self-love is an interesting... This is interesting. Because there are multiple ways I can answer this question. It's another yes and no. So self-love from a psychological vantage point, right, from within this construct that we're seemingly existing in, is very important. Absolutely. You know, y'all have the concept that it's just not good to be a doormat, right? That's a good place to start. If you're a doormat, you let everybody step all over you and you're always there to serve others and you never ever think of yourself, that's not healthy. Okay. But the reverse isn't healthy either. To only think of oneself and never think of others is equally unhealthy. And there's a beautiful balance that has to happen there. Beyond that, you know, self-love with a capital S, it's kind of like the same thing. Self and love, they would equate with each other. One is the other. Because the self, capital S, which there is only one of, and you are that, can't not love itself. Because in loving itself, it loves everything. Because it's all one. There is only one. And so nothing is loved any more than anything else. You see? It's all the same. Love is love. It's only kind of here in this reality where we conceptualize everything and then put words to concepts that you have the experience of like different kinds of love. So loving oneself, small s, does seem simple. It's very difficult here, certainly, because of because each person, as they're born into this matrix, through the primal imprint, you're already in this space of separation. So that being said, understand that literally from the moment of birth, you're already sitting in the space where everything that comes after is just the piling on of the teachings that you're separate. Okay. And that, and being separate, that means that you're alone and that you have reason to be frightened and certainly reason to feel ashamed. Look at what we do with our children. I mean, right from the time they're tiny, we enforce with them over and over and over that they're whatever the name is that we name the child. And then I'm mommy. And that one there is daddy. I mean, right from the very beginning, the indoctrination starts, right? And then shortly thereafter, after they're not quite infants and they move like to toddler stage or whatever, then the shame programming starts. Bad boy. You know, that was naughty. You shouldn't do that. You know, good girls don't do that. You name it. I mean, I don't have to tell you. You all went through it as kids. You know what it was to be shamed by your parents. And you know how it felt. It was terrible. It's just terrible. So is it hard to move into that space as an adult where you actually truly do love yourself? Absolutely. Because you've been rooted in self-hatred. And it's very painful. And that's the space, truly. Those are the key components. The real deep, deep pain, those are the key components that hold the whole life-death cycle in place. And the reason they hold them in place is because we're too afraid to go in and see them for what they really are. And so our fear of re-experiencing those states keeps that self-righteous piece in place. That's why we always go back to being self-righteous. Go back to the place of judgment, right? Go back to the place of justification for the actions that we're taking out of that self-righteous place. We do that because we don't want to experience that deep pain. But it's the deep pain that actually will set you free when you get into it and you actually work through it and see through it. Right? You don't have to change it. It's the program. It's fine. But you have to see through it. That it was never true. You never, ever had something to be ashamed about. I don't care what it was. You just didn't. Because anything you feel you're ashamed for is just a concept. And it's a concept that you're believing to be true. If you change the concept, then it falls apart. Right? As soon as you don't believe in that concept anymore, you realize that it has nothing of its own. It falls apart. And then that whole dynamic that is karmic just kind of just dissolves away and it's done. It's a beautiful thing. So yeah, self-love, you know, in the illumined state, that's all there is. That's it. The self is love, right? From a psychological place, yes. Through doing this level of work especially, you will move into profound self-love. You know, especially when you realize you're God and then you can't not see God everywhere. What's not to love? You love all of it. All right. I think those are good words to end the evening on, don't you? Yeah. So we have a song for tonight. Oh, I think it's a good one, actually. I picked it very randomly, as if there was such a thing, earlier, and didn't know how it would play out with the show, but I think it'll be perfect. So we'll do this as our meditation to end the evening. Again, please feel free to send questions to questions for Shusada at theshambhalacenter.com. You can leave feedback with BBS as well, I believe. And we would welcome any donations you might care to give if you appreciate the work that we're doing. And also join us on Facebook at theshambhalacenter.org. And join us at also the group, the Add Your Energy team globally, because their big monthly meditation is this coming Tuesday, right? So they are on Facebook at facebook.com/AYE Gatherings. That's great work. And I facilitate, PLN and I both facilitate the monthly meditations here in Charlotte. So great, great work. We'd love to have you like that page and join us there. Okay. All of our love to you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we will be with you in meditation for the next almost 8 minutes. Love you. Good night.
by thy grace that I see. It's by thy grace.
You are beginningless. You are divine.